From Bhagavad Gita as it is, recording? Prabhupada's presentation of Bhagavad Gita. Is there one of those little mats? The floor is a little cold, so I was... Oh, thank you. There's another one for you that you can... So, today we're doing which verses?
13, 8 through 12.
I think that's fine. Thank you. Thank you very much. It's like first class airplane seat. So, chapter 13, which is quite an interesting chapter. Actually, they're all interesting. But this one is also. Swami Geet. So, chapter 13, text 8 through 12. Well, that's right, this is the jumbo version. So, first I'll read the Sanskrit, and then we'll try to figure out what it means. So, Amani Twam Dambi Twam Mahingsa Chantir Arjavam Acharyo Pasanam Shocham Staryam Atma Vinigraha Indriyartheshu Vairagyam Anahankara Evacha Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadi Dukha Doshanu Darshanam Asaktir Anabhishanga Putradara Grihadishu Nityam cha samachittatvam ishtanishtopapattishu maichananya yogena vaktirabhyavicharini vivikta desha sevitvam aratir janasangsadi adhyatma jnana nityatvam tattva jnanartha darshanam Ita jnanam iti proktam ajnanam jarato nyatha. So, any questions? So we're going to go over these verses, word by word. Sort of a Google street level view of the verse. So here's the translation first.
That's the
Rakshas in the basement. Humility, pridelessness, nonviolence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation of sense gratification objects, absence of false ego, the perception of the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease, detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home, and the rest, even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events, constant and unalloyed devotion to me, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of self-realization, and philosophical search for the absolute truth, all these I declare to be knowledge, and besides this, whatever there may be is ignorance. Or literally in Sanskrit, unknowing. Ajnanam. So, Prabhupada has written quite an extensive purport, several pages actually, one of his longest purports in Bhagavad Gita. Almost six pages. So perhaps we'll read the first paragraph of this six-page purport. This process of knowledge is sometimes misunderstood by less intelligent men as being the interaction of the field of activity. So what does that mean? We'll get to that. And we'll talk about what Prabhupada means by that. But actually, this is the real process of knowledge. Well, I won't keep you in suspense. In chapter 13, and really only in this chapter, Krishna introduces a particular, you could say, jargon or terminology in which he calls the body kshetram, the field, which is interesting because the very first verse of Bhagavad Gita begins dharma kshetre, kuru kshetre, on the field of dharma, on the field of kuru, of the kurus, and now Krishna is explaining that ultimately for the soul, the body is the field. And of course there is, not that the Kurukshetra Yudha, the Kurukshetra battle is symbolic, there was a real battle, it's a real battlefield, but there are real things which also lend themselves as symbols or paradigms or examples of many other things in life. So in that sense, the real battle of Kurukshetra is also a very powerful, you could say, metaphor or symbol of our condition, because here we are, the soul and the body, and struggling, as we know, every one of us has within us our better side and our bizarre side. Everyone has just a little touch of madness within them, which comes out in certain times and places. And so all of us are struggling for self-realization. So Prabhupada, now, when some people say, Prabhupada said, this process of knowledge is sometimes misunderstood by less intelligent men as being the interaction in the field of activity. In other words, all these divine qualities, all these virtues, all these spiritual qualities are personal qualities. For example, people are humble and people are tolerant and people are simple or people approach a guru. And so the impersonalist would claim that even these virtues, even these godly qualities, because they are personal, ultimately refer to a conditioned state of life. But actually, this is real spiritual knowledge, because real spiritual life is personal, not impersonal. So that's really what I think what Prabhupada's getting at there. The purport, this process of knowledge is sometimes misunderstood by less intelligent men as being the interaction of the field of activity, in other words, the body. But actually, this is the real process of knowledge. If one accepts this process, then the possibility of approaching the absolute truth exists. This is not the interaction of the 24 elements, physical elements, bodily elements, as described before. This is actually the means to get out of the entanglement of those elements. The embodied soul is entrapped by the body, which is a casing made of the 24 elements. And the process of knowledge described here is the means to get out of this case. Of all the descriptions of the knowledge process, the most important point is described in the first line of the 11th verse. Maicha nanya yogena bhaktir vyabhicharini. The process of knowledge terminates in unalloyed devotional service to the Lord. So if one does not approach or is not able to approach the transcendental service of the Lord, then the other 19 items are of no particular value. It's like if you, let's say you rent a really beautiful car and you leave for the airport really early and you get a first class ticket and then go to the wrong gate and miss your flight. So that's something like that. There's all these virtues ultimately culminate in an experience of the absolute truth. And if one misses the real point, then inevitably, by the turning of the, what is called the samsara chakra, the wheel of material existence, one will simply rotate again in the material modes of nature. So, but if one takes to devotional service in full Krishna consciousness, the other 19 items automatically develop within one. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, jasyasti bhaktir bhagavatya kinchana sarvair gunaistatra samasate sura. All the good qualities of knowledge develop in one who has attained the stage of devotional service. The principle of accepting a spiritual master, mentioned in the 8th verse, is essential. Even for one who takes to devotional service, it is most important. Transcendental life begins when one accepts a bona fide spiritual master. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, clearly states here that this process of knowledge is the actual path. Anything speculated beyond this is nonsense. So, Prabhupada does not mince words, tells it like it is. So now, let's go over these verses and take a look, see what we've got here. One thing which immediately occurs to me is that Krishna is describing certain, you could say it, emotional dispositions or psychological states or behavior, certain kinds of behavior is knowledge. Now, normally in modern English, when we talk about knowledge, we think of simply some, you know, some data you have in your head. Like I know the capital of Turkey is Ankara, right? Correct. So, I mean, there's all kinds of information you can have. Like you know this and you know that. So it's a certain body of data that you know. So what does it mean to describe? What does it mean to describe? Let's say knowledge as behavior. That this behavior is knowledge. Or to say that this, you could say disposition, like to be humble, is a type of character trait. So Krishna is describing character traits and activities as knowledge. And so what is it? First of all, we should keep in mind, and I'll try not to get too academic here. Too young to die, but the word jnana, when we have Sanskrit words and we translate them into English, they're not, let's say, the words obviously overlap very significantly. So that's obviously a correct translation. In fact, the word knowledge, because English used to be a phonetic language, until people, I guess, one day woke up and said, why are we making these ridiculous sounds? But actually, if English is originally a Germanic language, and in German, of course, they still pronounce the KN. So it used to be knowledge, which is just jnana, if you think about it. Gnosis. It's from the Greek gnosis, like a gnostic, one who doesn't know, or doesn't know if they know, or doesn't know if they know if they know. So anyway, you have the Greek gnosis and the English knowledge, and of course Sanskrit jnana.
And where does cannoli come in?
That's a type of wise preparation. Actually, cannoli. Actually, in Italy they say gnoli. So anyway, so personality traits, character traits, activities. Because the Sanskrit word, again, we have the word jnana, the English word knowledge, but technically, the Sanskrit word means not only knowledge, but something like knowing. And so Krishna is, in a sense, giving what would be called in psychology a behavioral definition. A behavioral definition in the sense that certain kinds of behavior reliably indicate certain states of consciousness. For example, if someone gets very angry at you, in a sense, we say, like, why are you so angry? In a sense, all that we really see is certain behavior, like the person's face has turned a puffy red and they're screaming or something like that. And so we deduce, we assume, or induce, we induct from that behavior, we assume this person is actually in an angry state of mind. So we do it all the time. We constantly rely upon certain kinds of behavior to understand what's in people's minds. So let's look at these qualities. Let's look at these qualities and see what Krishna is saying. First, the first thing is amanitvam. Mana. The word mana comes from the Sanskrit word man, to think, manas, the mind. It's the same as English, mental mind. And so mana means sort of like thinking well of someone. In fact, Lord Chaitanya says, amani na manadena. So mani means one who has sort of self-consideration, thinks highly of himself. That's called mani. And here, amani twam, not having the quality of vanity, you might say. You might call this vanity or conceit, of thinking very much of oneself, being sort of self-centered, self-absorbed. So that's the first point. And this is knowledge. Again, for all these qualities, we should keep in mind, this is knowledge. If at times I've made the distinction between philosophical atheism and psychological atheism. Philosophical atheism means that officially your philosophical position is there's no God. That's philosophical atheism. I can be a philosophical theist, but psychologically, I'm self-centered. Emotionally, psychologically, I actually see myself as the center of reality. So, if I really understand Krishna, if I really get it, that there is a Supreme Lord, there's a Supreme God, Krishna, if I really understand this, then I will not only be a philosophical theist, but I will be a psychological theist. In other words, I won't think too much of myself, I won't take myself too seriously, because I see the proper proportions, that Krishna is infinite and I'm very tiny. So this is knowledge. This true humility comes not from low self-esteem or some other emotional issue, but actually comes from knowledge of seeing that Krishna is how great he is. It's humbling to actually, when you really understand Krishna, it's a humbling experience. And then adumbitvam, I guess means not being dumb. Dumba is pride or hypocrisy. And so Prabhupada translates adumbitvam, pridelessness. So, obviously, same idea here. And then ahimsa, non-violence, or as it's sometimes translated, non-injury, because the word hinsa is not just the general Sanskrit word for violence. It has the sense of injuring someone unfairly, or injuring someone who is innocent. So that, for example, Krishna is not being contradictory when he tells Arjuna that ahimsa is a good quality, but you should fight this battle. So the word ahimsa kind of became popular in 20th century Indian politics as the term nonviolence, but really it means not harming an innocent person. Not harming an innocent person. That's really the idea of it. Not harming. So, anyway, kshantir, forgiveness or tolerance. Arjavam, the Sanskrit word riju means straight, riju. And so from the word riju, arjava, which means literally just straightness, as we say in English, straightforwardness, or it's translated honesty. And it's also one of the qualities of the Brahmins, which Krishna will give in chapter 18. Acharya Upasanam. Prabhupada says, approaching a bona fide spiritual master. The word Upasana, also it's a word for worship. Upa. Upa in Sanskrit means near. Asana, as you know, means like either sitting, like an asana is a seat. But it's also the Sanskrit way of saying to stay somewhere. Like to sit somewhere in the sense of to stay somewhere. And so so upasana, which is a word used for worship, literally means staying near someone. In other words, like the English word attending upon someone, like personal service to someone, attending upon that person, upasana. Then shocham, cleanliness. Cleanliness is next to godliness. Prabhupada once wrote a letter to the Gurukul in Dallas, when there was a famous Gurukul in Dallas, and said that, he said, your school should be revolutionary clean. It's a letter from Prabhupada, remember, they put it on their bulletin board, that's the term he used, revolutionary clean. Stirium means steadiness. Prabhupada translates it here, steadfastness. Atma vinigraha, Self-control, atma-vinigraha. Indriyarteshu vairagyam, detachment from the sense objects. Anahankara eva cha, and indeed freedom from false ego. I think I've mentioned this before, I've mentioned it a million times, but a Sanskrit H tends to become a European G, and some examples of that are the Sanskrit word vahana, you probably know the word vahan, vehicle. Actually, the English word vehicle, you can see vahan, vehicle. And, of course, the German word wagen, as in Volkswagen. So Wagen, Wagen. You see the H becomes a G. So that's where Volkswagen comes from, right? Even Volkswagens are Vedic. And another example, this H to G, is the Sanskrit word maha, and it becomes the Latin magna, as the English word magnify, magnificent. And, of course, a very interesting example is the Sanskrit word huta, which means invoked, like to invoke God, and it becomes, you change the H to a G, and it becomes a German Gott, the English word God. So that's where the English word God comes from, according to linguists. And the final example I'll give, then we'll continue with our regular programming, is the Sanskrit word aham. You all know this word aham, I, so you simply change the H to G and it becomes the Greek ego. So ahankara, literally making a hum, it's literally just egoism. Egoism, ahankara. Even the word aham is just ego in Greek. In the Greek word ego means the same thing, it means I. So anahankara, being without this ahankara, eva cha janma mrityu jara vyadi dukkha doshanu darshanam. Darshanam, you know, means seeing, and anu. Anu means to follow, or and therefore it indicates sequence. And so the prefix anu before a word is a way of saying steadily, like, you know, like one moment after another, like steadily, in sequence, seeing something. And so anu darshanam, regularly seeing. Anu can also mean that you see by learning from authorities. Because darshanam, you're seeing anu by following. So every, as Prabhupada said, every word is very significant in Bhagavad Gita. So Krishna says these are doshas. Dosha in Sanskrit means a flaw, a bad quality. Prabhupada translates it here as evil. Dosha is always the antonym, the opposite of guna. Guna in Sanskrit means quality. And just as in English, quality can be a neutral term, meaning, you know, high quality, low quality. But also, the word quality can mean by itself high quality, like you say, a quality product. And so it's exactly the same in Sanskrit. The word guna can mean a quality in general, such as sattva guna, rajoguna, tamoguna, or it can mean a good quality, like quality in the positive sense. And when it's used in that way, as it's used constantly in the Bhagavatam, and Krishna himself uses this all the time, you can see in the 11th canto, the opposite of guna, which means quality, bad quality, or something which doesn't have qualities, dosha, guna dosha. So, and for example, there's that verse in the Bhagavatam, Kalayar doshani dhe rajan. Kali Yuga is an ocean of dosha, an ocean of discrepancy, of flaws, of imperfections. And so here Krishna says that one, anudarshanam, one should always see, or one should see by learning from authorities, the dosha, the flaw, the imperfection, or the evil, as Prabhupada puts it, of birth, death, disease, birth, death, old age, and disease. And anyone's interested in historical linguistics, you'll know, of course, you'll recognize immediately the word jara, old age, is our English word, words like geriatrics and all that, geritol. That's a different thing, on a TV show. Anyway, geriatrics, gerontology, all of that is just Sanskrit jara. There's very interesting words, like even, you may know, like what do they call an osteopath, path, a bone doctor? The Sanskrit word for bone is asti. So, it's quite interesting. So, anyway, moving right along after learning the Sanskrit word for bone. So, janma mrityu jara vyadi dukkha doshanu darshanam. One should always see or learn from authorities that this world has unavoidable, incorrigible flaws. You cannot fix it. You cannot fix it. The world has these imperfections that cannot be fixed. And of course, we know science has tried very hard, strenuously, to eliminate old age, disease, and death. In fact, very close to here, there's that huge medical center. But it's still a 100% mortality rate. It's still a 100% mortality rate. So, it's interesting. Krishna says in the Gita, Kalosmi Loka Kshaya Krit, time I am, destroyer of the world. So if you took all the powers of earth, I mean all the armies, all the scientists, just all the powers of the world, and tried to call a 1 second time out, you can't. If all the powers of earth tried to stop time for 1 second, you can't. Not 1 second, because Krishna says, time I am. Similarly, this birth, death, old age, and disease, knowledge, again, these things are knowledge. We have to see this. The good news is we're not the body, and so we do not grow old, get diseased, or die. Then Krishna says, asakti, non-attachment. Of course, the word sakti is also from the same root as sangha, attachment. Jayato bishayan pungsas sangas tishu pajayate. Sangha means attachment, so non-attachment. Again, if I see isha vasimidam sarvam, jakin cha jagatyam jagat, isha upanishad, that actually Krishna is everywhere. Krishna dwells everywhere. Everything belongs to Krishna. Vasa means residence. So, avasyam literally means it is the home of God, that God dwells in everything, and therefore everything is His, because if I say this is your home, it means it's your property. So everything that exists is the home, is the residence of God. Isha vasimidam sarvam jatkincha jagatyam jagat tena tyaktena bhungjita. You should enjoy with that has been set aside for you by God. Magridat kastya svidhana, and do not encroach upon anyone else's property. So, if we know this, if you open your eyes in the morning and you see Krishna's everywhere, or you even feel the presence of Krishna everywhere, or you know in your heart that Krishna's everywhere, then there's no scope for exploiting anything, because what will you exploit? I mean, how can a civilized human being steal from their own parents? So in that way, if everything belongs to Krishna, what are we going to exploit? Every body, every physical object, everything. Everything is just Krishna's energy. Vasudeva sarvamiti, Krishna's everything. Arjuna said to Krishna, sarvam samapnosi tatosi sarvam. You encompass everything, therefore you are everything. Aham sarvasya prabhava, Krishna says, I'm the source of everything. Matak sarvam pravartate, everything emanates from me. So if we open our eyes, if we really see Krishna, Krishna says, yomam pasyati sarvatra, one who sees me everywhere. Jomai sarvam pasyati, one who sees everything in me, is the real yogi. So if we have knowledge, there's no question of exploiting anything, because we see Krishna everywhere. So that's asaktir anabhishwanga, without attachment. Brahma says without being, without association. Abhishwanga means sort of like embracing, not embracing material things. Putra dara grihadishu. This is a tough one. Children, wife, home, etc. Krishna's not saying that you shouldn't care about these things. He's saying, now, there's often a confusion among people not Krishna conscious. They take their attachment as love. But actually, attachment and love are the opposite. Because attachment means I want to enjoy something, and love means I want to give. Attachment is taking, love is giving. And so it's perfectly okay to love your family. The problem in material, say, family attachment, the problem is not that someone loves their family. The problem is they don't love them enough. Because if you really saw your family as part of Krishna, I remember the first year I went to Harvard, I remember just literally a month after I started my studies are at Harvard, my youngest brother passed away from a disease. And so, of course, it was very, I came from a very, how would you say, it's almost like an Indian family, very tight family. And when I thought that my brother passed away, of course, it was disturbing. But then when I thought, no, Krishna has simply called one of his children. And so when I realized when I was saying my brother, the key word was my. And I had to let go of that. I had to allow that soul to belong to Krishna, not to me. Because when I say my brother, I really do mean my brother. There's a real sense of possessiveness. It's my brother. And that's what we have to let go of. So if you see everyone as part of God, then you really love them. Then you really love them. And actually, there's only one family. Because Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Pitaha Masya Jagato, I am the father of this world. Mata and the mother. And the mother. I am the father and the mother of this world. Dhata, the creator. Pitamaha, the grandfather. Oh, yeah, just a little bit up. That's good right there. Is that good? Pitaha Masya, and Krishna says, Tasang Brahma Mahat Jonirahang Bija Pradat Pita. I am the seed-giving father. And again, in chapter 11, Arjuna says to Krishna, Pitasi lokasya chara charasya. You are the father of this entire universe. So three places in the Gita, Krishna is called Pita, the father, which in American Sanskrit is Pita, you may have noticed. Which technically in Sanskrit means a beverage. Or it could also mean the color yellow, but that's okay. I mean, it's said with sincerity. So, anyway, so Arjuna says to Krishna, Pita Asi, you are, and by the way, in the Sanskrit word Asi, you are, it's the same S as in the English word is. Or Spanish, eres. So, Pita si lokasya chara charasya, you are the father of this entire world. So, in all these different verses, Krishna is our parent. Krishna is the supreme parent. And he calls himself that. Krishna himself says, I am the father, I am the mother. So, there's only one family. I mean, I know when I was growing up, I mean, to this day, my elderly mother, she says, like, you talk to your brother? If you talk to your brothers, I mean, isn't it? I mean, the parents want to see their children on good terms with the other children. And the parents are concerned the family stay united. So if we want to see Krishna, I mean, obviously, if you have, let's say, a family, if you're a grihastha, I mean, obviously, Krishna has given you that special responsibility. For example, Rupa Sanat, you're the temple president here. So, I mean, obviously, you understand that all the temples are Prabhupada's temples, but this is your specific duty. So, in the same way, Krishna, we have to have both these understandings that Krishna has given me a special duty towards certain souls. And therefore, by Krishna's arrangement, this is my immediate family, so to speak. But at the same time, we have to remember that there's only one family, and the father and mother, Krishna, are not pleased if we care about, for example, if you don't care about your brothers and sisters, obviously your parents won't be pleased. So if we want to please Krishna, we have to remember that ultimately there's one family. There's only one family. So in that sense, we should actually love our family, not attachment, which means a type of false ego and attachment where I'm trying to enjoy. I'm trying to possess, like this is mine, these are my people. So rather than that false ego, we should truly love our family by seeing them as part of Krishna. And then Krishna says, Nityan cha samachitta tvam. and always even-minded. Sama, Sanskrit, English for same. Sama means the same. And it's interesting because you know Sindhu, the Persians, they pronounced an S as an H. That's where the word Hindu comes from. I thought that was kind of funny how they're changing all these city names in India, like now Mumbai and Chennai and Kolkata. What about India? I mean, that's also a Western thing, but of course, it's not my business. They could just change it to Bharata, I guess. In any case, the word Hindu, of course, is just Sindhu. And in the same way, from the word Samo, in Sanskrit, you just change the S to an H and it becomes the Greek homo, as in homogeneous. So, anyway, that's where the word homo comes from, in case you're interested. So, moving right along. So, sama chitta tvam. Now, the word sama, it's interesting because in Sanskrit, the word sama means not only equal or the same, it also means sort of like smooth. And if you say not sama, the word is vishama. Vishama means not sama. And so it means rough or difficult. It's not sama. An example of that is in Lord Chaitanya's Shikshastakam, where he says, vishame ayinanda punuja patitam king karamang vishame bhavam buddha. So anyway, so again, Krishna says that we should see all creatures equally, because that's who they really are. Imagine, you may have noticed that, I mean, certainly in America, I'm sure in other countries, I'm sure in India also, sometimes there are actors and actresses are a little eccentric. You know, people like sort of get into their roles and only come partially out of the roles, so kind of get half stuck. I mean, imagine a costume party or some little theater production where the people forgot who they really were. People actually forgot who they were and couldn't come out. So, Krishna says, you know that very famous verse in chapter 5 where Krishna says, Vidya vinaya sampane brahmane gavi hastini shuni chaiva shapake cha pandita samadarshana. That whether in the highest human being, which is vidya vinaya sampane brahmane, not just a brahmana by birth, but a brahmana who specifically is endowed with knowledge and humility. Not just someone, not simply a jati brahman, but someone who actually has the qualification. So that's the highest human being, vidya vinaya sampane brahmane. And then gavi, a cow, Hastini, an elephant. The word hasta means hand. So the word for elephant, hasti, literally means he has a hand. So the elephant uses the trunk as a hand. So an elephant is called hasti, like in Hastinapur, city of the elephant. So, anyway, vidya vinaya sampanne brahmane gavi hastini shuni, a dog, or shapakecha, which literally means a dog cooker, which is kind of gross, but... Or graphic, I should say. I mean, it's graphic. Krishna's really telling it like it is. So it's interesting because you have the highest human being, you have the lowest human being, the dog cooker, the highest human being, the lowest human being, a cow, an elephant. And then Krishna says, Pandita, the wise, Samadarshana, have equal vision toward all these creatures. Obviously, you're not going to, you know, you're not going to bring an elephant home with you and put him in bed or something. But so it's not that sages don't know that that's a cow, that's an elephant, that's a dog cooker, or that's a dog, or that's a Brahmin. But the idea is that even as we respect and deal appropriately with people's external situations, we still have spiritual vision. We still have spiritual vision. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his song Gurudev Kripa Bindu Diya, which was sort of an old hit from the 80s, in ISKCON. Remember that was on the charts in the 80s? So one of the lines in that song is that Sakale Samman Korite Shakati Deho Nata Jatayata, which means Deho Nata. Sakale saman krite shakati dehuna. Give me the shakti, give me the power to krite to offer all respect to everyone. Sakale saman krite shakati dehuna. But then Bhaktivinoda says jathayata, appropriately. Appropriately. And Prabhupada used to always say, you don't embrace a tiger in the name of Brahma-Bhuta vision. So this is Vedic culture. On the one hand, there are two words for this in Sanskrit, which are used very commonly in philosophical Sanskrit. You find it a lot in Shankara, you find it in all the Ramanuja, all the great philosophers. Vyavaharika, Vyavahartha, and Paramartha, Paramartika. The idea, artha means meaning. There is a Vyavahara in Sanskrit means sort of ordinary intercourse, social intercourse. Like, for example, if you're applying for a driver's license and it says birth date and you say, I was Najayate Mriyate, I was never born, I'm eternal soul. It's a philosophical truth, but you'll never get a driver's license. So even back in ancient times, you know, people had to get their chariot licenses or whatever. So, in other words, it's always been the case of God. When we were in the early days of the movement, we were so wonderfully sincere and immature. Like sometimes we'd be chanting on the streets, and some reporter would come and say, "Hi, what's your name? Krishna Das." Yeah, but what's your regular name? Krishna Das. Where are you from? Krishna Loka. I know, but where were you born? I was never born. And that would make like the ultimate Monty Python movie, wouldn't it? Anyway, so remember those days? So it has always been recognized in Vedic culture that just for ordinary worldly affairs, you have to kind of go with the program sometimes and just like act normal. So that's called Vyavaharika. But then there's Paramartha, the ultimate meaning. So to get a driver's license, tell them where your body was born. But if you're trying to explain Bhagavad Gita, then you have to tell the philosophical truth that we're not this body. The soul is never born. Najayate, mriyate, va kadacha, never dies. So these two levels have always been recognized. So in treating other people, there is a sense, there has to be a vyavaharika and a paramarthika behavior. And this is actually also indicated in the Isopanishad. In that famous verse, vidyang cha vidyang cha jastad bedo bhayang saha. You have to know both the vidya, which is sort of jargon in philosophical Sanskrit for the spiritual world, and avidya, which is the material world. You have to know both in order to be liberated. So, now it's interesting. What happens is because at most times in history, most people tend to identify with their bodies a bit. And so, of course, we know the philosophical truth and we are sincerely endeavoring, but still there's some. And of course, all of you here, you are the, la creme de la creme in the sense because you come for this class not knowing what I was going to say. So, but if you think about people in general, even people that have some faith in Krishna, they're not always like intensely spiritual at every moment of their lives. And so what happens is that you have these two realities, the lower reality, which is we have these bodies, we're in the material world, you have to fill out forms, you can't embrace a tiger, that God did give you a special duty to take care of this family, even though we're all one family. And so so what happens is people who are in the bodily concept of life, they sort of go overboard, as we say, they go all the way into this Vyavaharika, and they forget the Paramarthika. And so if you look at the history of India, the history of Vedic civilization, you see very clearly on the one hand, there is this extraordinary revelation of the oneness of all things. And on the other hand, there is a social hierarchy. Sometimes you talk about the Indian caste system. Europeans don't remember that until the Industrial Revolution, they had a hereditary caste system for a very long time. And actually, it's just the only difference between India and the West is that the Industrial Revolution came later. But anyway, that's another topic. So, anyway, so what happens is when a society tends to become a little materialistic, they only give lip service or no service to the ultimate oneness of all souls, and what really matters is the hierarchy, that my body is higher than your body, and so on and so forth. So, and then periodically, if you look at history, periodically, a great reformer comes, sometimes Krishna himself, like Lord Chaitanya, or Buddha actually did the same thing. The idea of saying, hey everybody, we do have a social hierarchy, there is sort of a division of labor, but at the same time, we're forgetting that ultimately, spiritually, we're all one. And so society, people again and again have to be reminded of that, because if you have the hierarchy and you forget the oneness, it just becomes oppression. It just becomes oppression. And so morally and spiritually, human civilization always goes through boom-bust cycles, so to speak, in which there, you know, things are going well spiritually, and then it just degrades, and then there's a reform, and then it goes better again, and then gradually, you know, attrition and so on. So you always find, throughout the history of every religion, there are these spiritual boom-bust cycles. And anyway, it's clear what Krishna means here. Krishna says always. It's interesting because Krishna is talking about many different virtues and qualities, but when he gets to samachittatvam, even-mindedness, he says nityam, always even-minded. So there's a special emphasis given to this quality. Nityam cha samachittatvam ishtan ishtopapattishu. And Krishna says you should always be even-minded when you somehow get what you wanted and what you didn't want. Ishta, anishta. Isn't it? The desired, the undesired. Ishta, anishta, upapattishu. When it comes. Actually, all these Sanskrit words are quite interesting. Pad. The Sanskrit root pad means to go, and therefore the word pada means foot, because the foot is what goes. Oh, just one little, just a little comic relief here. It's funny because we tend to take everything very seriously. This is Shastra, this is Sanskrit. But if you actually know Sanskrit, the great sages had an incredible sense of humor. And a lot of things. Just one simple example. They they have, like for example, a bird is called a kaga, a sky goer. A kaga, a sky goer. And a snake is called an uroga, chest goer, because it goes on its chest. And an animal is called a mriga, it goes on the earth. And a tree is called a naga, a no-go. And a naga. Another interesting thing is that trees are called padapa, foot drinkers. In fact, you find that in the prayer of the six Goswamis, kalpa padapa tale. Padapa, foot drinker. Anyway, the verb pada means to go. So here Krishna uses upapatti. Patti is just the noun from pad. And so upapatti literally means like coming near or approaching. So when in other words, when, as we would say in English, when good or bad things come your way. It's a typical thing you'd say in English. And that's really what Krishna is saying here. Ishta anishta upapattishu. So when what you want or what you didn't want comes your way, always be even-minded. Because after all, Prabhupada's classic example, if you're a teller in a bank and someone makes a deposit or takes money out, they don't care. That doesn't affect their life. So in the same way, if we really know that everything belongs to Krishna, it's like, whatever. Okay, you know, Maya just made a withdrawal, or Maya just made a deposit. So if when good things come, instead of understanding this belongs to Krishna, this good thing came into my life, whether it's a beautiful child, whether it's money, whatever it may be, if some good thing comes into my life, it's an offering. Krishna has simply given me paraphernalia to make an offering. And if I understand it that way, then if, let's say, Krishna sometimes decides to take something away, it's all for Krishna anyway. So if Krishna wants me to offer him this or doesn't want me to offer him this, that's Krishna's decision. It's like if you're in a temple and the temple authority says, okay, offer this boga, don't offer that boga, it's whatever. You know, yad yad yoga, whatever yoga. It's just whatever. So the more we understand that everything belongs to Krishna, the more it's just whatever Krishna wants. I just work here. Then Krishna says, Mayi, and Prabhupada says this is the most important point. Mayi chananya yogena bhaktyarga vicharini. This is a word Krishna uses in several key verses in the Gita, avyabhicharini. So I'll explain what this word means literally. Prabhupada translates it here without any break. Devotion without any break. Sometimes he translates it without falling down. For example, the same word occurs in the verse Mangcha jo avyabhicharena bhakti jogena sevat. One who serves me with unfailing devotional service. Chara. The word chara means movement, moving. Like charati, he or she moves, he or she or it moves. So chara means activity or movement, as in achara, for example. Achara, behavior. Acharya, one who teaches by behavior or good conduct. So, and V means away. It's actually, we still have that word in Latin or Italian, via. Like in Italian, if they want to say, like, get out of here, get away, they say, via, via, via. So if you ever go to Italy and someone's bothering you, just say, via, via. So that's actually the Sanskrit V. It's the V is the opposite of sam, by the way. Like sankirtan, together kirtan. One more linguistic note, if you can stand one more. That the word sam, like sankirtan, together kirtan. And then we still have that sam in English. Through the Greek, we just spell it S-Y-N, as in synthesis, the together thesis. So the sin in synthesis is the sung in sankirtan. It's the same thing. Anyway, so vi-abhichara means behaving away in the sense of deviating. Deviating. And so vi-abhichara in that sense means a deviation. A deviation. I mean, think of this English word anyway, enough grammar. So, Krishna says here that devotion or devotional service bhakti, which is avyabhicharini, in which there is no deviation. And in the other verse, he says, Mangcha avyabhicharini bhakti yogena, one who serves me with undeviating devotional service. So that's the word Krishna is using, undeviating devotion through, and he says, undeviating devotion to me through ananya yoga. Ananya yoga. Krishna often in the Gita uses the word ananya, like ananyas chintayanto mam and so on. So anya in Sanskrit means something else. Other. It means other or another. And ananya means no other. So what is no other yoga? Because that's, in other words, yoga in which there is nothing else but devotion. There's no lust, there's no greed, there's no pride. There is nothing but spiritual devotion. Ananya yoga. And that's the word Krishna uses here. Ananya yogena. And that's what he's... So, undeviating devotion to me through yoga, in which there is nothing else but that devotion. And then vivikta desha sevitvam, resorting to a secluded place. And which doesn't... Like, for example, here... This is a secluded place, vivikta desha, in the sense that maya is kept away. So we are secluded from I mean, you know, there's no, you can't buy liquor inside this building, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, there's no poker games going on, are there? No. No. Not for money. Anyway, so the idea is that the temple is vivita. It is set apart. It's a place where we can all come and experience Krishna. There's only pictures of Krishna and his devotees on the wall. Everything here is for Krishna's pleasure. The deity's here. So it's a concentrated, focused place. And therefore, it's actually vivikta seva. Now, it's interesting. The word which Prabhupada translates as aspiring, is sevi. In other words, serving. The idea meaning that and the word, anyway, Sanskrit word seva can have that sense of resorting to or taking to, a sense of serving. And so literally serving, you know, going to a secluded place like a temple. And then aratir jana sangsadi, which means no attachment to the, literally, Prabhupada translates it here as general mass of people. Jana, as you know, is people. We have this word jana in Latin. The Latin for jana is just Gentile, same word, which means the people, gente in Spanish, pronounced gente, but it's spelled gente in Spanish or Italian or Portuguese, which just means people, gente, janta, jantu in Sanskrit, same word, jantu, gente, or jana, people. Think of the English word generate, janayati in Sanskrit. So, and sat means to sit, the same as, you know, English word seat, sat. Again, the same word. You can see, it's very obvious how close Sanskrit is with Western languages. So again, sang-sat, sitting together. It means like an assembly, a sitting together, sang-sat, like sankirtan, congregational sitting, or just sitting together, sang-sat. And so arati, not having rati, not being attached to the public opinion, like because the public doesn't appreciate spiritual life, therefore I won't practice spiritual life. Not being a slave of public opinion. And of course, you can take this to the opposite extreme and behave in very eccentric ways because you just don't. I mean, you know, as far as possible, we should accommodate the public and try to make them comfortable with us. But we don't compromise anything which really is important to us, such as our spiritual practices and philosophy. But in things which are just superficial and external, we do try to fit in so that people will feel comfortable with Krishna consciousness. So aratir jana sangsadi adhyatma jnana nityatvam tat, and literally the eternality of spiritual knowledge. The eternality, nityatvam, of spiritual knowledge, tattva gyanartha darshanam, seeing the value of knowledge of the truth, seeing the value of knowing the truth. Literally, that's what it means. Seeing the value of knowing the truth. Very interesting. Tattva gyanartha darshanam, eta gyanam iti proktam. This is declared to be knowledge, agyanam jadatonyata. And literally, otherwise from this, is unknowing, is ignorance. Now, even the word gnor, gyan, gnor, you can see it's all related. Ignore. So this is knowledge, and apart from this, there is simply ignorance. Atonyata. So any questions on these points? Yes. Okay, I'll give you the quick version of that. As I've already explained, as I haven't already explained, there's a very important large river that's been there for a long time that basically runs through what is now central Pakistan down to the sea, Arabian Sea, called the Sindhu. It was called in ancient times the Sindhu. So in ancient times, people on the west side of the river were the Persians. They pronounced that Hindu. And then if you go down one more one more door down. You don't keep moving. The next, so you have the Indians or Bharat Varsha, then you had the Persians, and then you had the Greeks. And the Greeks did not pronounce an H at the beginning of a word, like the English word honor. Right? We don't say honor, we say honor. Or hour, like how many hours does it take? And so on. So when they saw this word Hindu, that they said, okay, Hindu. And then it became India.
And then, like, how long did were people speaking Sanskrit until other languages came up? And how did those languages come?
Well, as far as the history of language, there are some languages, the word Sanskrita, if you know what the word means, the word Sanskrita is just like the word Sanskara. It's the same word. Sanskrita means refined, something which has been purified and refined. And so there were always different languages. For example, Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu says that when Krishna appeared in this world, he spoke Sanskrit to the Brahmanas, and he spoke the local language to the residents of Vrindavan. And then Krishna spoke. So even when Krishna appeared, there were many different languages in the world. So the Vedic literature doesn't really talk very much, doesn't show much interest in what would nowadays be called, let's say, historical linguistics or the history of languages. The Rig Veda says that the Aryas, the civilized people or noble people, speak properly. And so, therefore, there is Sanskrita. There is a very refined language, purified language, which they spoke. But even when Krishna appeared in the world, apparently, in Vrindavan, they just spoke the local language. So, any other question? Yes.
Maharaj, when you were reading this list, it just almost seemed overwhelming because, you know, even one quality in like the slightest degree.
It's beyond even being an Eagle Scout, isn't it? Boy Scout.
So it was really nice that you read the first paragraph of the purport, and I was appreciating how in the very first paragraph of the purport, Prabhupada puts, you know, taking shelter of the spiritual master as kind of the quality from which everything else will flow out.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yeah, very good. And and also Prabhupada quotes that verse, Yasyasti Bhaktir Bhagavati Akinchana, which means one who has pure devotion for the Lord. Sarvair Gunais Tatra Samasate Sura. That person will develop all the gunas, the good qualities of the gods. So, yes, if we approach alien interference? If we approach a bona fide acharya, or spiritual teacher, and again, it's interesting because, you know, these qualities have a lot to do with character and behavior, and the very word acharya, achara, means good conduct, like sadachar. And so acharya, one who teaches by good conduct. So if we study Krishna consciousness under Krishna's bona fide representatives, then we do develop these qualities. If we are serious. And they come because, I mean, the good news here is that it's you. In other words, you are a pure soul. So it's not like you've got to somehow or other, you know, find some, I don't know, humility and paste it on, or find some spiritual vision and, you know, and take the blue pill or something. Yes. The idea is that these are actually all your original quality. It's you. For example, if you, let's say, God forbid, have some disease, and then you're getting better, you just become yourself again. When we go to sleep, we forget everything, but when you wake up, you know, after a minute or two, you just remember everything. So it's not a question of artificially, like, you know, okay, 10 minutes a day for this one, 15 minutes for that one. In fact, even in historical Christian theology, and not only just in Christian theology, but in general in the philosophical tradition, there was this notion of the unity of the virtues. That if someone truly becomes a good person, they will develop all good qualities. So there's really, in a sense, one thing, which is goodness or purity. And if someone truly becomes pure and good, then they will have all these qualities. And of course, real purity and goodness is to love God. So that's you. I mean, that's who you are. You are a pure soul. So, in fact, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhya Kabunai. Love of Krishna is Nitya Siddha. It's eternally present, eternally established within you. It's Sadhya Kabunai. It's not something you have to sort of like, something you have to learn which is foreign to you. Like, let's say if you decide, let's say you were so inspired by learning what the capital of Turkey is that you actually want to learn Turkish. So you can spend your vacations there and communicate with the people. So, let's say like learning Turkish, the Turkish language is not something which is intrinsic within you, like everyone has that little Turkish language thing inside of them. No. It's actually, for someone not from that place, it's a foreign language. It's a foreign language. And so it's something which is, you know, it's a bit laborious. You have to learn it, you have to practice it, any foreign language. So Krishnadas Kaviraj is saying that's not the nature of Krishna Bhakti. It's not something foreign to you that you simply have to learn and memorize. It's already there within you. It's already within you. So if we simply revive this Krishna consciousness, if we simply wake up, there you are. You are that person with all these qualities. Because you're part of Krishna. If you think about it, that's a very heavy thing. We are part of Krishna. So every one of us, in a sense, every one of us in the bodily concept of life is extremely, we are totally underrating ourselves. It's so funny because by one of the great ironies of Maya's creation, the more proud and puffed up and vain we become, the more we underrate ourselves. Because our vanity is based on the body. So when we become proud and egotistical, we identify with the body. But actually, by identifying with the body, even in the cause of self-centeredness, you're totally degrading yourself and underrating yourself. Because every one of us is actually something millions of times greater than any bodily identity. So it's illusion works that way. The more we try to promote ourselves, the more we degrade ourselves. And the more selfless we become, the more we become humble. So if you become humble, let me know how it feels. I'm curious. So the more we actually cultivate humility, the more we become exalted. And the more we cultivate pride, the more we degrade ourselves. It's one of those great ironies, isn't it? So again, as you said, Acharya Upasanam. And actually, we have Prabhupada's books, we have Prabhupada's teachings, we're all practicing. Prabhupada, the way I describe it, well, learning from Prabhupada and Rupa Goswami, in the chapter 6 of the Nectar Devotion, Rupa Goswami says, and Prabhupada translates that a devotee should learn Krishna consciousness from the great acharyas under the guidance of a spiritual master. In other words, the way I sometimes put it, Kali Yuga is like this great jungle, and Prabhupada sort of came down with this Vaikuntha bulldozer and just, you know, bulldozed this sort of this, you know, 6-lane highway interstate right through the Kali Yuga. And so the duty of a spiritual master is simply to guide people on the path that Prabhupada revealed to us. And it's very interesting in ISKCON, another point I've emphasized is that if you look at the position that Prabhupada claimed for himself, was concerned that we understand about him, Of course, when he was here, he was our Diksha Guru. But the real position that Prabhupada was concerned with in terms of his historical identity was as founder Acharya. For example, there are letters from Prabhupada where he's writing to some important government official or something, and he'll say, "Allow me to introduce myself. I'm the founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness." And so Prabhupada is my Diksha Guru, or as other people here are Prabhupada's disciples, but as founder Acharya, every devotee in ISKCON has the same access to Prabhupada if they follow his instructions, which for a younger devotee means eventually accepting a guru and so on. But still, it's not the case that every generation is farther away from Prabhupada, because that would lead to an absurd conclusion, namely that, let's say, as time goes on, the entire movement and all the devotees get farther and farther away from Prabhupada. It's of course not the case. And that's why Prabhupada insisted that we understand he's the founder Acharya. There's incidents where he actually defended this position against certain silly challenges. So that any devotee, has Prabhupada equally as their founder Acharya. Prabhupada is equally the founder Acharya of every devotee that follows him. And so whether you have this guru or that guru, just what generation you are, ISKCON is already a multi-generational movement. And so obviously one must follow the proper etiquette in regard to one's guru. But everyone has exactly the same access to Prabhupada as founder Acharya. That's a wonderful thing. So Acharya Upasanam. So if we take, and one thing about Prabhupada, all the time I spent with him, and not only just hanging out with Prabhupada, but being trained by him, because I had the good fortune. What's interesting, I've now been, as Prabhupada would say, an inmate of the Hare Krishna movement for about 40 and a half years, having begun at the age of -1. And so Prabhupada was actually, when they say never ask a lady or a sannyasi their age. So I joined the movement in 1969, and so I had the great fortune of eight years in the movement when Prabhupada was here. And then 32 years when he was. So in that age, even at my age, I can still do that kind of math. So that means that only 20% of my spiritual life, Prabhupada was personally here. And the other 80%, he wasn't. But still, he was, but of course, Prabhupada was always present for all of us. Acharya Upasanam. So, but anyway, that was a good point you brought up. Yes?
I would like to ask, because I heard Prabhupada on a lecture say one time, I understand the importance of accepting a spiritual master.
Mm-hmm.
And he said on this lecture that these classes were set up for everybody in general to have the opportunity to understand Krishna. And that even if a person does not engage in the devotional service, that if he simply understands Krishna, that he will not have to take birth again. I listened to this lecture over and over again to make sure that I heard it correctly.
Yes.
And I just want to make sure that I get the proper understanding and I'm not misinterpreting.
Yeah, if you... Prabhupada, when I took sannyas in 1972... the age of one, and I traveled and preached in the colleges. Prabhupada wrote me a very interesting letter. He said, "Do not present Krishna consciousness just as a bunch of rules and regulations, but rather as the most sublime philosophy." So Prabhupada You see it sometimes. You know, we can just assault people with rules and regulations. Like somebody comes up, well, no, you can't do that, and you know, you can't touch that with your left hand, and don't do this, and don't do that. And it's like, you know, it's just too much. So, I think what Prabhupada meant in that lecture, because with Prabhupada, you have to look at everything he's saying and try to understand how it all fits together. I think what he means there is that. Because he often had to deal with people, let's say, who couldn't follow the rules, or who would say to Prabhupada, because Prabhupada was, he had more practical experience than any of us in preaching, because he was traveling all around the world, and he was getting all kinds of feedback, and people asking him questions, so he really was out there on the front lines all the time. And one thing that people would often say to Prabhupada around the world is that, too many rules, I can't do all this, I can't give up that. And so what Prabhupada's doing here, he doesn't want people to think that if you can't just jump into all the rules, that this is not for you. In other words, and if you look at Bhagavad Gita, because ultimately it's Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, we understand that Prabhupada is faithfully presenting Shastra. So in chapter 12 of the Gita, Krishna says that if you can't practice sadhana, what we now call sadhana in earlier Sanskrit, when Krishna spoke, the word was abhyasa. That's just the older word for sadhana. Repetition, practice. So what Krishna says is just love me. If you can't do that, practice. Practice bhakti yoga. And if you can't do that, then just work for me. So Prabhupada threw a wide net. He was trying to bring everyone in. And so in certain lectures, what he means to say is, never mind if you can't follow all the technical rules or this or that, still try to love Krishna. Don't go away, try to love Krishna. And if somehow or other you can become attached to Krishna, it will all work out. Because by that attachment to Krishna, a person will eventually end up doing all the right things anyway. So, anything else? Okay. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Yeah.